Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 373 for June 10th, 2012. Coming up in a few minutes.
Obviously, there's been some considerable thought applied to this whole expansion activity already. But over the next few months, we will be dealing with external bodies, regulatory authorities. We will have engineers and surveyors looking at different sites. That's going to provoke, in the normal run of things, a lot of speculation.
How do you spend $1.5 billion? That's what Dr. Nick Morgan and his colleagues at Diageo are going to be doing over the next 5 years to boost whiskey production. He'll explain just what the plan is later, at least what's been decided so far. I'll also have the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Whiskey Cast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Normally, the Diageo announcement would be the week's lead story, but there is breaking news from Edinburgh, where the North British grain distillery has been closed in connection with the Legionnaires' disease outbreak that has claimed at least one life in Edinburgh. The Telegraph reports Scottish health officials have confirmed at least 36 cases so far, with another 44 suspected cases. Friday, the North British distillery was served with what's known locally as an improvement notice. It's located right in the middle of the hot zone for Legionnaires' cases and has 3 of the 19 cooling towers that are being tested for Legionella bacteria. The distillery is owned by Lothian Distillers, a joint venture between Diageo and the Edrington Group, but Health Minister Nicola Sturgeon says it's not yet being assumed that the distillery is the source of the bacteria, while testing is still underway. Lothian Distillers has also halted work at its Muir Hall warehousing complex while the investigation continues. Just a few quick details now on the Diageo expansion plans in Scotland. The company will spend £1 billion, a little more than $1.5 billion, to increase whiskey production. That includes one new malt distillery to be located in either Speyside or the Highlands, expansions at several other malt distilleries still to be determined, and plans will be drawn up for a second new malt distillery that could get the green light later, depending on demand. There will also be additional new warehousing capacity, along with other expansion projects. Once again, more on the plan with Diageo's Nick Morgan later in our Whiskey Cast in-depth segment. There's also a Diageo expansion in the U.S., where the company has acquired the Cabin Fever maple-flavored whiskey brand from the Robillard family. Cabin Fever has been available for several years in the Northeast. It'll be rolled out nationally starting this fall. It'll be the fourth North American whiskey brand in the Diageo portfolio, along with Crown Royal, George Dickel, and Bulleit. Meanwhile, Chivas Brothers is fighting a trademark battle in China, where a local entrepreneur has claimed the trademark for the Chivas Regal logo to use on clothing. China's trademark laws give priority to the first person to claim a trademark, whether or not they actually have the global rights to do so. The Scotsman reports Chivas is just the latest victim of so-called trademark squatting in China. The Pernod Ricard division has already lost in a Beijing court and at China's trademark board, even though Chinese officials recognized the Chivas Regal trademark rights back in 2009. Duncan Taylor is losing one of its key executives. Mark Watt has been responsible for international sales for the independent bottler as its brand ambassador. The company announced Watt's departure on its Facebook page this weekend. Watt was with Duncan Taylor for 8 years and was named Whiskey Magazine's Young Ambassador of the Year in the 2009 Icons of Whiskey Awards. No word on where he's headed or who will take over the brand ambassador's role at Duncan Taylor. Ireland, meanwhile, may be getting yet another new distillery. Niche Drinks has applied for planning permission to build a new distillery in County Derry in Northern Ireland. The company has been producing St. Brendan's Irish Cream Liqueur for export sales at its current facility in Londonderry, but wants to increase its production capacity. Belgian whiskey lovers are getting their annual visit from Glendronach's Cask in a Van tour this coming week. For the last 4 years, Glendronach has taken a cask to retailers around Belgium and given consumers a chance to fill a bottle straight from the cask. This year's cask is a 2002 Pedro Jimenez Sherry Puncheon at 55.5% ABV. The tour starts in Zolder on Monday and ends in Beveren Wass on Saturday. McTeers held its latest whiskey auction this week in Glasgow. The top bid was £9,000, about $14,000, for a bottle of Glenfiddich 50-year-old Scotch from 1991. That's much more than the runner-up, a Black Beaumont from the original 1995 release, that went for £2,700, about $4,200. Third place went to a Laphroaig 1960 vintage that sold for £1,600, or about $2,500. The next McTeers auction is set for July 11th. And that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Visit us on the web at glenmorangie.com or download our iPad app at the iTunes App Store. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made.
I'm still looking for listeners who would like to be on the tasting panel for upcoming episodes of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. If you're interested, email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com and put tasting panel in the subject line. Now let's check the comments of the week brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Got a news report on our Facebook page as I was putting this week's episode together from one of our Texas listeners. Sean Fouché reports a new Fort Worth distillery has just released its first batch of blended whiskey. Firestone and Robertson's whiskey has already sold out most of the stock at local retailers. Thanks for the update, Sean. Speaking of blends, our buddy Gavin Ryan Thompson in Germany has been busy experimenting with a blended whiskey of his own. He posted a photo of his first blended malt on our Facebook page, using 16 different single malts. He says it was an experiment with great results. Well done, Gavin. I posted the Diageo expansion story on the Facebook page earlier this week. The comments have been coming in. Jason Moran is hoping to benefit from the expansion. He posted this. I hope that means they're hiring. Now's the chance to leave my government work and get into the whiskey business. Good luck, Jason. If you have something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, whether it's your career plans or your blending experiments, well, you can always post it on our Facebook page, or you can email me if you're not a fan of Facebook. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Don't forget Father's Day is this coming weekend, and an engraved bottle of Johnny Walker Blue Label would make a great Father's Day gift. Check with your local retailer on engraving options in your area.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. In 1886, William Grant set out to fulfill a lifelong ambition, to make the best dram in the valley. Today, a rarity in Scotland, Glenfiddich still remains independently owned by the fifth generation of the same pioneering family. This unique legacy of skill, passion and pride forges a long-term commitment to creating truly great single malt, without compromise. Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To learn more about our award-winning range and join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases and preferred events, visit glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. The Australian Single Malt Tasting Championship is this coming Saturday in Sydney. Whiskey Live at the Highland Games is next Saturday in the Chicago suburb of Itasca, Illinois. Bonhams has its next whiskey auctions on June 20th in New York City and the 27th in Edinburgh. Anthony Wills of Kilhoman will be leading a master class at the Whiskey Exchange in London on June 25th. Tickets go on sale this Monday. Tales of the Cocktail is coming up July 25th in New Orleans. And a change to report, the Whiskies of the World Expo's debut in Austin, Texas, has now been changed from November 8th to November 2nd. Finally, both the Spirit of Speyside Festival and the Isla Festival of Malt and Music have set their dates for next year, so you can start making your travel plans. The Spirit of Speyside Festival will be May 2nd through the 6th, 2013, while Fagile will run from May 24th through June 1st. There's a full year's worth of whiskey events in the calendar of events on the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Lafroy. Take a virtual distillery tour at Lafroig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Lafroig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Barry Crockett, master distiller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
The Irish pot still whiskey category, it's the unique story of Irish distilling practice. Its flavour and characteristics can be summarised to two particular factors. Firstly, the use of barley, which is harvested here locally, gives a particular aroma of what I describe as apple, verging towards pear, and indeed even a peach taste and aroma. And of course, this can be also categorised as a spirit which is very, very aromatic and sweet. In terms of taste, the barley gives, again, what I would describe as a velvety, soft, syrup-like effect on the palate. So it's a very rounded finish, very smooth. And again, this really arises from the use of very high percentages of barley in the brewing mix.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you this week by Jura Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. Getting back to the story I mentioned at the start of this episode, Diageo announced plans this week to invest £1 billion, or a little more than $1.5 billion, to expand its Scotch whiskey production capacity over the next 5 years. I talked with Dr. Nick Morgan of Diageo's whiskey unit after the announcement on Wednesday. How are you guys going to spend £1 billion over the next 5 years? I assume it's something that can be done fairly easily, given the amount of money that you have to put into increase whiskey production. But where's all this money going to go?
Well, the money's going to go across a number of different things, Mark. So, first of all, what we've announced today is that as part of that investment, we're going to build a new malt whiskey distillery. In addition to that, we're going to carry out major extensions or expansions at a number of our existing sites. And then additionally, we're going to carry out the planning work that's required to build a second new distillery. Although at this stage, the timescale for actually building that second new distillery will be dependent on the pace of growth in Scotch sales going forward. In addition, as you might expect, because that begs a few questions, we're putting more money into warehousing capability. We announced that we were applying for planning permission a few months ago to build a new warehouse complex in Fife. And today we're also announcing that we're going to increase our warehousing footprint at Black Grange, which is our large warehousing complex in the Central Belt.
Was there any thought given at any point to putting some of this back into Kilmarnock since the Johnny Walker bottling plant was shut down there recently?
Well, no, sadly, there was a mark. I mean, the Kilmarnock site has now been gifted to the local community for the Kilmarnock College. And, of course, the emphasis on this announcement is around expansion in distillery production. And whilst we haven't announced where the new distillery will be or which distilleries we're going to be expanding, clearly, that's something that's going to be located in the Highlands or in Speyside.
And this comes on the heels of Rose Isle, which just opened realistically about a year and a half ago and went into full production.
It comes on the heels of Rose Isle, and it comes on the heels of significant expansion at Glen Ord and also at Kalila, which has only just reopened a month or two or three months ago.
So where is the demand coming from that justifies this level of investment? We've talked a lot about China in the past, but I'm assuming it's not just China.
No, I think everyone likes to get very excited about China, and quite properly, because it holds huge potential as a growth market for Scotch whisky in the years to come. But at the moment, you know, if we were to look at the Diageo business, you would look at Brazil, you'd look at Mexico, you'd look at Venezuela, where brands like Johnny Walker and, of course, Buchanan's are flourishing and delivering exceptional results. You'd look at Russia and Eastern Europe, where, again, Johnny Walker has a great footprint, but brands like White Horse are also very significant and growing very strongly. In Africa, we have, albeit from a low base, very significant growth in the Johnny Walker brand franchise. And in North America and some pockets in Europe, we have significant growth as well.
Now, you mentioned that a decision has not been made yet on where the new malt distillery will be located, but you're hinting Speyside in the Highlands. When will the decision be made on this, and how soon do you expect it to be built? And would it be likely that it would go adjacent or in the same neighborhood with some of the other Diageo distilleries in that region?
Okay, well, what I can tell you at this stage, Mark, I think you need to think about this as almost a two-stage announcement. Obviously, there's been some considerable thought applied to this whole expansion activity already. But over the next few months, we will be dealing with external bodies, regulatory authorities. We will have engineers and surveyors looking at different sites. That's going to provoke, in the normal run of things, a lot of speculation. So with this first stage of the announcement, we're really making clear our strategic intent, the level of investment we're talking about, and the sort of objectives that we hope to achieve. Over the next 3 or 4 months, we'll go into the more detailed planning activity, and we hope at that point we will be able to come out with a very clear announcement about not only the new distillery, but which of the existing distilleries will go through an expansion program as well.
Now, we know obviously it's not going to be Glenord or Kalila, since those have just been expanded, but I know there's a significant demand and need within the company and within the industry for Islay whiskey, so is it possible that Lagavulin might be on the list for that?
Well, I'm not in a position to rule anything in or anything out. What I would say about Lagavulin is that the site does not necessarily offer a huge opportunity for expansion, and I would also point out that we've just spent a significant amount of money significantly increasing output at Kalila to make sure that our supplies of peated whiskey for blending and for single malt purposes from that distillery are quite robust going forward.
How soon will we start seeing, I know you said over the next few months we'll start seeing planning permission, but you're planning to spend £1 billion, which at today's rate is about $1.55 or so billion dollars. How soon will we start seeing some of this money actually hitting the economy and actually creating construction jobs and actually being spent?
Well, I can't give you an exact answer because I'm not so close to the projects, but I would think in the run of things that within 12 months we would hope to be in the situation of starting to work on sites for the new distillery, wherever that may be, and also the expansion work, bearing in mind that the expansion work will have to be phased because you can only take so many distilleries out of supply at any one time. So that will be a rolling program of expansion, I would imagine. In terms of jobs, Mark, we anticipate that once the work has been complete, there will be over 100 new jobs within Diageo. And, of course, during the whole work process, we anticipate that several hundred more will be created in ancillary services and in the construction industry.
Does this also lead to additional increase in support services like your cooperage and your other facilities and the grain sourcing issues and the maltings that will have to supply these distilleries?
Of course, it has implications throughout the whole of the sort of supply chain for malt whisky production. As you know, we opened a new distillery at Cambus right at the beginning of this year, which was built with obviously a view to the future in terms of its capacity. So we are quite well provided for there. Clearly, we will have thought long and hard about wood sourcing, so we know we can get supplies of the quality of cast that we require. And at the front end of the process, we're also in good shape when it comes to maltings, whereas, you know, we still own four of our own maltings and in barley supplies. But it's your question really does, I think, just show what a huge operation this is from the field, you know, from barley all the way through to bottle.
And we should clarify, Cambus is the grain distillery, right?
Cambus is the site of the former grain distillery, Mark, which closed in the early 1990s. It's been a warehousing site, central warehousing site, and we built the cooperage there and, as I say, opened it at the beginning of the year.
How are you fixed on grain?
Grain whiskey, well, you'll also know, I'm sure, we've had a massive expansion program at Cameron Bridge Distillery, which is really only just coming to an end. That's been about a three-year program. So again, on the grain whiskey side, we've already taken steps to make sure that the supplies and also the capacity to increase output, if we need it, is going to be there as well.
This has to be something you've really never seen before in the whiskey industry, at least this massive level of investment. I know you're a historian by practice and by trade, and I'm wondering just how this translates historically in terms of expansion within the whiskey industry.
Well, I think I'm right in saying that the Diageo CEO, Paul Walsh, this morning described it as a sort of pivotal turning point in the Scotch category, and I think that's probably true. Of course, in the past, there's been expansions, and it's been pretty much the cycle of boom and bust, and the last big bust was back in the late 1970s and 1980s. But we're convinced now that the world situation we face is very different from that. We do a lot of modelling, which is based around looking at indicators such as growth of gross domestic product, GDP, in emerging markets. And all the indicators that we have tell us that growth of Scotch whisky is assured. And what we're now doing now is really putting the investment in place to make sure that Diageo is able to grasp its share of that opportunity as it emerges.
Anything else you can add I didn't ask about?
Well, I think the other thing I would say, Mark, we talked a lot about production. It's relatively easy to make whiskey. It's a pretty tough thing sometimes to sell it. So this investment program isn't only a huge sort of sign of our confidence in Scotch whisky. It's a huge, I think, sign of confidence or vote of confidence in our ability to market and sell this whisky when it comes to maturity and is put out there in these global marketplaces.
Now, we mentioned Rose Isle earlier, and the spirit from Rose Isle, we still haven't even been able to officially call that whisky yet because it's not 3 years old. Are you guys satisfied with what you're getting from Rose Isle, at least in terms of the spirit that you've been able to taste and being able to get the varieties that you had hoped for?
Yes, we are. I mean, we have got three-year-old whiskey now from Rose Isle, actually. We haven't bottled any yet because it doesn't satisfy our requirements in terms of the maturity of the spirit. We don't, perhaps unlike other people who've opened distilleries, we don't need to bottle it straight away as soon as it's 3 years old. So we'll bottle it when our blending teams are happy with the overall quality. Principally at Rose Isle, as we announced previously, we're aiming to make two styles of Speyside character whiskey, a light sort of grassy style and a more characteristic fruity style. The majority of the production, I think, there has been of the fruity Speyside character, and we're very, very happy with what we're getting off the stills.
Is it fair to say that the new malt distillery will have sort of a similar profile of being able to produce multiple styles of whiskey?
Well, I think that depends, Mark. We know now that we have the capability of doing that. Clearly, when the final decisions are taken on what and where to build, they'll be based on an understanding of what we need to make sure we have the right selection of styles of whiskey in our inventory to ensure that we can put together the diverse range of blends we have. This isn't about having one big distillery that produces one style of whiskey for one style of blend. It's about giving our blenders the quality and the flexibility they need to produce, on the one hand, a Windsor for Korea, on the other hand, a Johnny Walker Black Label for the US, on the other hand, the Buchanan's for Mexico or Venezuela. So those decisions will be taken as we look really hard into the inventory and decide which styles we need. It might be another Rose Isle style distillery. It might be one that's dedicated to a single character, and we don't quite know that at the moment.
Of course, when more details on the new distillery and expansions are announced, I'll have the details here on WhiskeyCast. WhiskeyCast In-Depth is brought to you this week by Jura Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. Visit the Jura website at isleofjura.com and learn how you could win a bottle of Jura Superstition. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you this time around by Bal Blair. Since the Fagiel wrapped up a few days ago, I thought I'd taste a couple of Islas from independent bottlers this week. Duncan Taylor bottled a single cask distilled at Kalila back in 1983 at 54.3% ABV. The nose has good peatiness along with heather, honey, and a bit of nuttiness. The taste is very smoky and spicy with cinnamon and hints of honey and coconut underneath. The finish is long, smoky, and spicy. I'm scoring Duncan Taylor's 1983 Kalila Single Cask an 85. Meanwhile, the Whiskey Exchange's Elements of Islay series now includes BN1. Of course, the series uses names similar to those from the periodic table of elements instead of distillery names, but we can easily gather that it came from Boonehaven. While there's no age statement, it's bottled at 55.6% ABV. The nose has notes of peat and brine, along with touches of smoked salmon, wet sand, ginger, and soft cinnamon. Now, the taste starts off syrupy sweet before a strong cinnamon blast kicks in. It fades out slowly to reveal hints of maple and brown sugar. The finish is spicy and long with a nice cinnamon touch. I'm scoring the BN1 from the Whiskey Exchange's Elements of Islay series a 90. Now, I've often talked about single-grain whiskies as a good alternative when the weather heats up, but they can also have a lot of flavor and heat of their own. I tasted the Kawasaki 1982 Japanese single grain this week. It was matured in a sherry butt and was one of the official whiskies for Whiskey Live Tokyo last year. It was bottled at 65.5% ABV. That's a whopper. Of course, the Kawasaki distillery has been closed for many years, but you can still find this bottling online through several retailers. The nose is strong with dried fruits, especially plums and raisins, along with hints of pine sap, soy sauce, and red wine. The taste is intense but tasty with a good mouthfeel, cinnamon and maple syrup notes, cocoa, and very much like a dark rum. The finish is long with notes of licorice, rum candy, oak, and a touch of pine. I'm scoring the Kawasaki 1982 single grain an 89. The What I'm Tasting This Week department is brought to you by Bal Blair, whiskeys timed to perfection. I spent some time this week updating the tasting notes on the WhiskeyCast website and the apps for both iPhone and Android users. You'll find links for the apps at the WhiskeyCast website, along with the calendar of events, links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the WhiskeyCast store powered by Amazon.com, and my photo gallery, along with a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast is supported by Glenfiddich, the world's most awarded single malt. To join other single malt appreciators for exclusive news, vintage releases, and preferred events, visit Glenfiddich.com.
Glenfiddich, skillfully crafted. Please enjoy responsibly.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2012, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.